This is a podcast from Minute Media.
This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Verderam and Mark Carman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stacking the Box. I am Matt Verderam. I am playing a little bit more of the role of host this week with Mark Carman at Bears OTA. So God bless you, Carm. Enjoy. But I am joined, of course, by the esteemed Ben Heisler of BetSide. Ben normally, of course, with us for the betting portion of the show. This time, with us for the entire show. Ben, you're stuck for the hour. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to be stuck with you, Verderam. Fun show ahead. Very excited to dive into a lot of these different categories, especially when it comes to trying to figure out what the hell's going to happen in this wild AFC West. And a little bit later on in the show, looking forward to hearing some of your thoughts on some of these dark horse MVP picks. A lot of movement early on since the offseason began. Saw a little bit more movement after the draft. So curious to get your perspective on some of those guys that may not be amongst the initial conversation starters when it comes to MVPs this year.
Yeah, I always find it interesting. Like, look, most years, 90% of the time, it's going to be a quarterback who wins MVP. And that's only improving year after year now as the league is trending so much more towards quarterback and passing stats and everything else. But I'm also, you know, keeping an eye on some of these guys who are receivers who now it feels like, especially with 17 games, are approaching 2,000 yards in a season. You have those rare running backs, guys like Derrick Henry, who are always a threat for 2,000 yards. We'll get to all that here in just a few minutes. But I wanted to start, listen, I think, let's be real, we're in the dead period, all right? We're through the draft, we're through free agency, schedule release is over, and now it's, you know, it's OTAs, and really the kind of a wait-and-see approach until we get to, you know, mid-July or so once training camp starts to ramp up. And so every week we're going to try to hit some topic that is going to be a big topic come September. And I think, you know, I wanted to start with no division has gotten better or more competitive than the AFC West. I mean, you can certainly make a case the NFC West is good, the AFC North is quietly very good, but the AFC West, the Raiders made the playoffs last year. The Chiefs hosted the AFC title game for a fourth straight year last season, and they won the division six times in a row. Denver went out and got Russell Wilson, and the Chargers added a bunch in free agency and in a trade with Khalil Mack. Looking at it from 30,000 feet, how do you handicap the AFC West?
I think you still have to balance it with the Kansas City Chiefs on top. I think there's been the major substantial movement is losing Tyreek Hill, but you still have the best quarterback perhaps in the league, and you still have plenty of the key pieces in place to feel like it's still a team that has also dominated this division since Andy Reid came to the Chiefs back in 2013. I even with the loss of Tyreek Hill, which, I mean, you know, is substantial. Like, that's a clear-cut threat and the number one receiving option in this offense other than Travis Kelce. And so they're going to have to adapt, but they've made some moves to help them stabilize it. It's not going to replace Tyreek Hill, but it does keep things still moving. Mahomes still has a plethora of weapons. Defense, perhaps the kid out of Purdue makes a little bit of an impact, improves the pass rush, which was a disaster last year. Getting that corner, McDuffie out of Washington, potentially stabilizes that position, which was a position of need. I still look at the Chiefs at the top, but then I don't know how you kind of figure it out the rest of the way, because Denver having a quarterback now with the weapons that Wilson has, it's clearly a locked in opportunity for him. But I think the other thing about Denver that I'm starting to doubt a little bit is whether or not that defense is as elite as people think they are. Like, they actually struggled in their DVOA rankings last year. They weren't great at getting to the quarterback. And I talked with Peter Dewey over at BetSide, who's a diehard Denver Broncos fan. And he attributes a lot of that lack of success to once they traded Von Miller, they kind of just punted defensively on the season, and that the first half Broncos were more of that defense that you expect. But to me, I'd have to go Chiefs, then Chargers, because I just buy the quarterbacks there, followed by Denver, I guess, and then the Raiders, because even though the Raiders made the postseason and they got Davante Adams, they're still a lot missing on the defensive side, and you might be able to try and compete a little bit back and forth with the rest of the division offensively. Defensively, I think they rank at the lowest portion of it just to try and be able to get some stops. So that's probably the order that I'd go for now with the Chiefs on top.
Yeah. Look, you know what? You can make a case for a lot of different rankings 1 through 4. I mean, you really could. You can make a case for the Chargers finally getting over the hump and being the team you look at and say, hey, look, they've got a great young quarterback in Justin Herbert. And you've got J.C. Jackson now at corner with Asante Samuel, and you've got Derwin James in the backfield as well, and Bosa and Mack on the edges. The problem I have with the Chargers, and will forever have with the Chargers, until something finally changes, is can they win big games?
Right.
Can they ever win a big game? I mean, this is a team that last year had an opportunity. My daughter goes running out of the office. Has an opportunity to really stamp their seal in the AFC West, so to speak, against the Chiefs last season on Thursday Night Football at home. Couldn't do it. Then they go get blown out by Houston in December and then lose to the Raiders in that classic wild game week 18. I am with you ultimately here. If you said to me, what is the thing you're most certain of in the AFC West, I'd give you two things. One is the Raiders defense is going to kill them this season. Look.
That's a good front four, too.
They have Crosby and Jones, who are great. I defy anyone who's an average football fan to name one other player on that defense. I mean, what are we talking about? Rocky Sin and Trayvon Mullen at corner? That's not going to play. Like, when you look at the defenses in that division, the Chargers have a lot of talent. I'm with you with Denver. I wonder how much Fangio leaving that makes a big difference. But there's some talent there. The Chiefs defensively are kind of a wild card because they have so many young guys. Like, I actually think defensively the Chiefs are going to stink early in the year because they just have a million new faces. But how good are they by the middle of the year?
All right. And that's also been a theme for them over the last few seasons too. Yes. Not necessarily because of the young talent, but them starting to figure out some stuff defensively midway through and starting to improve when they really need to, when everyone starts to freak out.
It is. And so, but like the Raiders, I don't see the upside there. If I'm playing the Raiders and I'm an offensive coach, I'm basically saying, look, we can't let Crosby and Jones beat us. And if we can hold them off for 2 seconds, we're going to score a ton of points. So I think even though they went to the playoffs last year, I think the Raiders are the worst team in the division because I don't think they can stop anybody. I don't love Josh McDaniels as a head coach. Josh McDaniels, when he has not had Tom Brady, has been awful as a head coach and as an offensive coordinator. And I like Derek Carr. I really do. I think he's a top 12 quarterback in the league, but he's the worst quarterback in the division. To me, they're the worst team, even though they're not bad. They're just the worst of the four. I still think the Chiefs, look, that team's won that division 6 years in a row. And until somebody proves they can beat them in a big spot in that division, I'm rolling with them. I still think in the end, you've got Mahomes, you've got Reed, you've got a great offensive line, you've got weaponry. You know, it's going to be tough to beat them late in the year. Denver sees them in week 14 and week 17. That's when they're going to be revving it up. And you're going to have to take them down probably at their peak as long as they're healthy. So I'm with you, Heiss. So I like the Chiefs at the top. And I agree with your rankings. I think the Chargers are the second best team. What do you think of Russell Wilson? Like, do you think that – now, look, obviously he's a big upgrade for them. No one's arguing that point. But of course. Is he going to be a guy who goes in there and makes them Super Bowl contender, playoff contender? Do you think he's past his peak at 34 years old? I mean, what? Because I think that's really the wild card of the division.
I don't think he's past his peak. I think you had a fundamental difference of opinion between how he wanted to operate in Seattle and how the coaching staff wanted to operate for him. Because you saw the first half of a season ago, not last year, but the year before, he was legitimately a top contender and a top favorite for MVP.
Yes.
Numbers were there. They went back to the postseason. He was having a marvelous season with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. They were using some of their running backs more in the passing game than we initially would have thought. The tight end position was working for them too with a bunch of no-name guys. And I actually thought that when they got I'm blanking out on his name. He used to play for the Rams.
Everett.
He came over to Seattle. What's his name?
Gerald Everett.
Gerald Everett. That's a big, athletic, fast tight end that can operate in the middle of the field and can also block a little bit. And they really didn't incorporate him that much into the passing game. So now you have weapons in Denver. Are they necessarily better weapons than what he had in Seattle? I don't know. We had talked about Denver having great offensive weapons, but Sutton did not have a good year at all last year. Judy got hurt. You still have KJ Hamler in the middle of the field. It's got good speed. Yeah. And Patrick is there too. And he's kind of a bit overlooked. So maybe they have more weapons. I don't know if they necessarily have better weapons than what he had in Seattle.
That's kind of where I fall. Like, that's why Denver to me is weird. Cause I look at them and I'm like, hey, Patrick, Judy, Sutton. Okay. I like the backs, especially Javonte Williams. As Gonzo points out in the chat, I don't love their offensive line. Their offensive line, like Bowles has made himself in a really good left tackle. I don't love the rest of that line. It's not the worst in the league, which, by the way, is another reason with the Raiders, they terrify me. Other than Colton Miller, that team can't block anybody. But I think Denver's offensive line is middling. But the thing that's interesting with Denver getting Russell Wilson from Seattle is I like the weapons, but I would argue pretty easily Metcalf's better than any of them.
Yeah.
Lockett's better than any of them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, to be fair, now the Chiefs have Kelce, but it's kind of like the Chiefs are going from this, like, I keep likening it to the Chiefs had a movie with two movie stars in Kelce and Hill. Now it's more of an ensemble anchored by one star, right? Like, now it's more like Kelce and Friends. With Denver, it's kind of just like, and Friends. There is no, like, on 3rd and 8, that guy's getting the football. Like, it's like, well, which maybe isn't the worst thing. Maybe you spread it around, it all works out. But in Seattle, there were two guys who if you got single coverage, that guy was going to win.
Yeah.
I don't know with Denver if that guy is going to win. And that, I do think, matters. I also have no idea if Nathaniel Hackett's a good coach, a terrible coach, or somewhere in between. There's just a lot of uncertainty in Denver where I don't have that with the Chiefs. And even to some degree, to be fair, I don't have that with the Chargers.
I think with Judy, though, I think he has a chance to be that guy. I think he can go into a breakout role from the ensemble, you know, like best supporting actor in the Denver Broncos movie to a potential, you know, actor in a leading role. He's got the talent. Like, that was when he came out of Alabama, like, the route running was by far and away, like, top level, like best route runner in the draft, I believe. And he was on his way to having a really nice season, even with Drew Locke's inconsistencies. But now you're dealing with a potential situation, an offseason situation with Judy, which we're not sure what the ramifications are going to be for that. And let's not forget, like, the type of numbers that Sutton put up a few years ago were really impressive.
Yeah, but excellent.
He hasn't been able to stay healthy, and he's had inconsistency issues as well. Like, you're talking about, again, it's not Metcalf. I don't want to go ahead and put him, you know, that type of conversation and comp together. But like a 3rd-and-7 type guy, I think Judy is a great pick. And what was so good about Lockett was his ability to stretch the field. And with Sutton's speed when he's healthy, like, that's definitely comparable to Lockett. Like, he's that type of guy where he's going to be a big downfield threat for them. And then you still have Hamler with that speed. You can use him on crossing routes. And they got that really athletic kid from Missouri, now that they've moved on from fans. No, yeah.
Nobody can pronounce the name. Yes, Albert.
Yeah, he played 2 hours for me, and I still can't pronounce his name.
Yeah.
So they're interesting. Like, they are genuinely interesting because I think you have perhaps the second highest ceiling offensively in the division, or they could be the worst offense if Russ is cooked. I just don't think he's cooked yet, but if he is, whatever kind of magic Nathaniel Hackett can potentially cook up, if Russ is done or he's already on the decline, I think we'll see it fairly quickly because this division will beat the hell out of you if you're not prepared for it.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And I look, if he's done, they're going 7-10. I mean, if that's the case, it's over. I'm with you, though. I don't think he's done. I don't think he's done. I still think he's got a couple of really good years left in him. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender, but I do think they're a playoff team. And you know, obviously we'll see how that shakes out. And a lot of that, and you mentioned it, like Cortland Sutton, of all those receivers, he's my favorite guy. Can he stand the field?
Yeah.
If he can stand the field, maybe he has 1,200 yards. Yep, it's possible.
Really quickly, I also know that Gonzo weighed in on Khalil Mack and how everyone's kind of boosting him up. He hasn't been the same since 2018, had the foot injury with Chicago last year. I think if you're actually talking from talent top to bottom, from offense to defense,
the Chargers have the best roster.
The Chargers have the best roster. I'm with you there. And Jalen weighs in on that too. He says he thinks they have the best roster, but they're a choke artist, like you mentioned. Like, how much would we be going in that other direction, taking truly the most talented team from top to bottom, if not for the fact that they continue to find all these different ways? Like, is it fair for us, even though the roster is vastly improved from a season ago, for us to look at it and say, yeah, they have the best roster, but we still just don't trust them?
Oh, it's 100% fair. I mean, at some point, you've got to win games, okay? I mean, look, talent's great. My dad has a great saying I believe in wholeheartedly. Potential's a fancy word for saying you've never done anything. Because if you're any good, you don't have potential. You're just good. The Chargers are the kings of having potential.
Yeah.
Every year, it's, you know, I think they've got a lot. And look, we all make predictions. I predict every game like a moron every year, okay? And I do it in May.
That was a great piece, by the way. That was fun to read.
Thank you. But my God, I mean, I'll be a dope, I'm sure, by October. That being said, everybody makes their predictions. I've seen a lot of people pick the Chargers to go to the Super Bowl. And I get it. Like, from a talent perspective, you could make that argument. But I look at them and go, can they make the playoffs first? Can they do that? Because every year we do this, and like last year, listen, and I give the Raiders a lot of credit. That team went through more crap last year than any team I can remember in a long time. Derek Carr and Rich Bisaccia held that team together, made a crazy run at the end to get into the playoffs. But I don't think even a Raiders fan, if they're being honest, would argue that that team was more talented than the Chargers last year. And the Chargers go into a game where all they've got to do is win one game to get in, and they can't do it. They just can't do it. And, I don't know what I think of Staley. Like, I like him, but he's so aggressive that it's going to backfire in some games. They're going to lose some games based off of the aggression. They're also going to win some. They're going to lose some based off that. I'd also say with the Chargers, the one thing other than the fact they just lose every big game they play that scares the hell out of me, they got a lot of guys in that team that get injured. A lot of them. I mean, Bosa gets hurt all the time. Derwin James has missed, I think, 28 games over his first four seasons, okay?
Keenan Allen, Mike Williams.
Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Austin Eckler has been durable, but last year got hurt. You know, you're talking about Asante Samuel last year, a really good rookie, but unfortunately had multiple concussions. I mean, that is a team. Talented, yes. They're hurt all the time. And not like a one-off thing. They're hurt constantly. And you know what? People say, well, the Chargers, they have no luck. Well, if you keep bringing guys back who are hurt over and over and over, at some point it's not bad luck. It's just you're rolling the dice, and you're probably going to lose on that. So I do wonder with them, can they stay healthy? Khalil Mack, another guy, is coming off a big injury. Like, can they stay healthy? And if they can, look, I don't care. I mean, shouldn't say I don't care. I won't be impressed if they beat the Chiefs week two at Arrowhead. I don't care. Like, that to me means nothing. Can you win the game when you play them in December? You know, or I think they play them in real late November, actually. Like, can you win that game? Because that's the game where it's going to be, okay, you're tied with five games to go. And if you win the tie. Like, that's been the game that they always seem to stumble all over themselves in, and they can't find a way to win. Let's wrap up the AFC West here real quick. If you had to pick a team that will – I'll combine the two bullet points I have here. A team that of the four that you think you could be the most off on one way or the other, which one do you think it is?
That I would be the most off on?
Prediction, yeah. Which one do you think could vary the most?
Probably the Broncos, right? Because of the level of variance that you have with a brand new quarterback and a brand new system thrown to completely different guys than he had before, at least with the other three AFC teams, you know that it's a stable and very good quarterback group. You have Mahomes, you have Justin Herbert, you have Derek Carr. And regardless of where you rank Carr amongst the NFL's elite, or if he's in tier two or three or four, whatever it is.
Good player.
Yes, good player, consistent player. You said he's a top 12 quarterback. I'd have to go and maybe take a double, closer look. But I think that's a fair ranking for him.
He's right around that.
Yeah. So I think there's just so much unknown with Denver. Like, which defense are we going to get? It's a brand new coach coming in. What sort of scheme is going to work for them? Are they going to be able to generate any sort of a pass rush? You know, like, they have some aging guys on that defense as well. How are they going to be able to hold up against a division that you might have to stop? And if you give up less than 30 points, like, are you going to be in the game? That's the sort of perspective that with Denver, you just don't know what to expect on both sides of the ball, that it could either be spectacular and a perfect fit, or it could be a complete and total disaster. I feel like I can project the other three teams much better than I can with Denver.
Well, you and I are in lockstep because I feel the same way. I will tell you right now, if you're them, you better get off to a damn good start, because early in the year, their schedule is very easy. They play Seattle on a Monday night, home to Houston. They get the Niners at home on Sunday Night Football. Then they're okay. They get, you know, they're at the Raiders. That's always a difficult game in division. Home on a Thursday night, short week, playing the Colts. And then you get Monday Night Football at the Chargers. Okay, tough game. But then you have the Jets and the Jags before a bye, right? Like, that is a schedule where you could easily be sitting there and looking at 6-2. But after the bye, their schedule, especially down the stretch here, becomes no joke. I mean, you come out of the bye, you play at Tennessee, difficult game, home to the Raiders, okay. Then you get the last easy game of the year at Carolina. After that, their last six games at Baltimore, Kansas City, Arizona, at the Rams, at the Chiefs, home to the Chargers.
Yeah, it's kind of like how they're ending the season is how the Chiefs are starting the season.
Right. And, you know, it's funny. If you look at the other schedules with the Chargers and Raiders, it's kind of the same. Like, the Chargers and the Raiders also have, like, fairly easy schedules, if memory serves. If the Chiefs are even with those teams after about 8 weeks, turn out the lights. Because they are – look, the Broncos are going to struggle down the stretch. The Raiders' schedule is impossible late in the year. I mean, I think it's one of the hardest stretches I can remember. I'm going to pull it up really quick before we move on here. The Raiders' schedule at the end of the year is almost as hard as Denver's. I don't know if I'd say it's quite as hard, but it's close. They start out the year, they play the Chargers week one, that rematch of the week 18 game. But you look at their slate down the stretch. So they week 13, Chargers at home. Then they're at the Rams, home to New England, at Pittsburgh, home to the Niners, home to the Chiefs. Now, they got a few home games in there, but again, a lot of playoff teams. A lot of teams are going to be fighting for playoff positioning. So I think those teams, if you're Denver, if you're the Raiders especially, you need to get out in front of Kansas City. You need to be out in front by a couple of games going into November. If you're not, you're done. You're not going to beat that team out. But I, yeah, it's interesting. We feel the same way on a lot of the stuff in the AFC West. And look, moving on and going into the future real quick here. So one of the things that happened over the weekend, I don't know about you, I did not expect it, did not see coming. And I reached out to a bunch of people in the NFL who none of them saw it coming. Drew Brees, out after 1 year at NBC, which that's not surprising. It didn't seem like the analyst role really fit him very well, but at 43 years old, all of a sudden he says, well, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I might play football again. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Do you see Drew Brees playing another football game in his career?
No. It's a fun little pipe dream, especially if you consider the Saints to be in a competitive window, which based off their defense and where they took somebody like Chris Olave in the draft in the first round, like, they have all the makings of a team that's trying to try and win right now. I don't know if they're necessarily prepared for it. And I think they were kind of banking on the fact that maybe Tom Brady was actually going to stay retired. But what does that accomplish? Like, his final year, he was getting subbed out. He got hurt. They were using Taysom Hill more. That ended up being a bit of a failed experiment. And now you brought back Winston to actually continue perhaps a successful run from a season ago, right? Like, they were 5-2 with Jameis, and
they were
big upset win in week one against the Packers where he played great. Now, he wasn't the reason they were 5-2, but they weren't losing because of him, which was a typical form of Jameis. You either win because of him or you lose because of him. There's really no in between. They found an in between, and he was a stabilizing force. And then once he got hurt, once he tore the ACL, he was out for five. He was out the rest of the year. They lost five straight games, and any shot that they had at the playoffs went completely out the window. It just doesn't make sense. Brees can't throw the ball more than 20 yards downfield at this point. His arm was already trouble in those final years of his career. It does not make any sense for them to try and bring him back. You move on. It's a nice little story for now. I put it at 0.00% chance he plays again.
I'm with you. 43 years old. Look, Breeze was washed up his last year. I mean, let's just call it what it was. I would almost argue the Bucs should give him a ring, because if he was even halfway decent in that playoff game, the Saints win going away. He threw a million picks. He was awful in that game. He's 43. I get Brady's 45. Let's not make Tom Brady the norm in anything. Okay, no. He is the exception to every rule we've ever known. I would be shocked if Drew Brees even tries to make a comeback. Oh, by the way, though, a fun little nugget. Because of the way the Saints manage their cap, which is unlike any other team in football, they owe Brees $11.5 million against the cap this year. That. Drew Brees, $11.5 million. Jameis Winston, $4 million. So Drew Brees getting three times the cap hit, essentially, of Jameis Winston. I gotta love Mickey Loomis.
He's getting paid not to play. That's the best possible scenario in retirement.
Not getting hit and check keeps clearing.
Less than 12.
I know we got a special surprise for everybody. It's Carm is now joining us here from Bears OTAs. Awesome. Look at this. All right. So Carm.
What's up, Carm?
Hey, buddy.
The Bears complete a pass during these OTAs. And were they longer than 5 yards?
So we haven't been granted access to see the Bears in action yet, Matt, until 11:45. So
Let's go home now.
You know, that slander is not welcome at this particular moment with all the optimism flowing in Chicago. Justin Fields going into year two, the schedule coming out. Bears fans, Patrick Schmidt on DeWindy's got him winning 11 games, Verderam. So oh, 11.
No, does he really?
He went to 11. Oh my God.
Like over the next 3 years?
Hey, man.
Games.
This is we got the hits principal, Matt Eberflus, new general manager, Ryan Poles. Aaron Rodgers has no one to throw the football to.
Neither does Justin Fields.
That is right. But I think you could actually argue that the Bears have a slight edge as far as targets to right now over Green Bay, of course. So they might have a slight edge of the quarter.
Two of them.
Hey, listen, it's May the whatever it is. It's a beautiful sunshiny day. I am missing being on the full show with you guys, but it's good to just be out, see a little football, and try to be positive.
Lucas is saying that Nick Wright picked the Bears to go 11-6. So I'm gonna have to message Nick.
That seems incorrect, but Lucas has never been wrong on literally anything on this show, so I trust Lucas to the end of the world.
Listen, Nick loves Justin Fields, and I like Justin Fields, by the way, a lot. I just think the Bears have done everything basically to crater him and hit him in the kneecaps this offseason. But apparently, Nick Wright and yourself and Schmidt, the esteemed Patrick Schmidt, do not agree with that assessment.
I mean, listen, the schedule is pretty favorable. Like, I got to 8 wins and like kind of looked around the room thinking this can't be right. But I mean, they've got a lot of bad football teams on there. They got the Texans coming in. You got Detroit twice. We don't have to go through the whole Bears schedule, but there's a lot of winnable games. So
Falcons, I get it.
Yeah. Atlanta. Right. So, hey, I think that there is a certain level of professionalism coming out of the coaching staff right now that was not here the past 4 years. And you did win 6 games last year, right? And people are freaking out about who they've lost or that they're worse off. Well, Allen Robinson had a terrible year last year for the Bears. So did Khalil Mack. They were non-factors. So is Fields going to be better? I think it'd be impossible for him to be worse. Will their offensive line be better? I would say that would be impossible for it to be worse. Defensively, can the Bears get to the quarterback? I think is a huge issue. But also, forget about this year. They're gonna have the most cap money of any team after next season. They're already at 90 plus million. They could be, you know, if they get more creative, close to 125. So they'll be able to actually be in the mix and be a legitimate NFL football team 1 year from now.
All right. So to that point, Verner, you brought up the fact that they're doing Justin Fields zero favors. think part of the reason is that they themselves recognize that they're not going to be doing anything this year. Yeah. Like there's an actual sense of like competence. And again, Carmen brought up the fact, like, there's competent and professional coaches. It's the goddamn Chicago Bears. Like, what? This is the bar. The part is we have competency in the coaching staff in the front office.
Well, like, you I mean, Ben, it's been Mark Trestman, old man, not interested, past his prime, John Fox, and way out over his skis, should never have been a head coach, Matt Nagy. So getting to competency is a big move here. Matt Eberflus has never been a head coach. Luke Getsy's never been an offensive coordinator. Ryan Poulton.
Are we sure they're confident?
I mean,
I'm not saying they're not, but like, are we sure that they are?
We also thought Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace were competent, you know, 4 years ago.
You know, it's a fair question. What, you know, who the hell knows? They've never done it. But I do just get a – when I listened to Matt Nagy the last 4 years, I just had a very hard time wondering how that guy could ever communicate with a football team and be taken seriously. Eberflus, I don't have the same feeling. He's been successful in Dallas as a coordinator. He's been successful in Indy as a coordinator. He's got a much larger resume to give you at least some confidence, because the Bears are always hiring first-time head coaches, because I can't even answer because they're too insecure to have somebody in the building that knows more than them, even though they always claim that they don't know anything. George McCaskey, what's up, Kevin Fishbane? They're all coming in today, baby. Shout out to The Athletic. But so – yeah, I do think that it'd be impossible for them to be worse off. Let's say it like that, right?
Let's first of all never rule out the fact that the Bears find a way to screw it up worse. Secondly, you picked them to win 9 games according to your Twitter feed.
Yes.
And I am willing to bet you almost anything that they do not have a winning record. And by the way, I'm not like anti-Bears in this. Like, I have nothing against them. I am willing to put almost anything other than my house and family on the line that team does not have a winning record. Anything you want, Garm. Anything. Money, beer, you name it.
Here, the over-under, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben Heisler, managing editor, BetSide, it is 6.5.
That's correct.
How about I just take the over, Verderam? You willing to take the under?
6.5? Yeah, I probably am.
All right.
And then I picked them to win 4 games. So, yeah, I'll take the under.
Okay, well, I think last time we were betting jumping in the lake or something along those lines.
Yeah, something in that.
It's actually a perfect number, because not only is it the actual projected number, if Verderam has them at 4, Carm has them at 9, that's a perfect place to meet right in the middle. So you got to go 6.5.
That's true.
I'm assuming we've talked about Matt Verderam picking every single game like he does every year, and everybody has read that piece. If they haven't, you should go and do that right now while you watch Stack in the Box. Right?
We mentioned it briefly. Yeah, all 272 regular season games picked, plus all the way through the playoffs. The Bears did not make the playoffs. I love Justin Fields. I just am looking at him and thinking, like, I could be their number two receiver right about now. Carm, you're there. You might as well line up in the slot, see if you can get some snaps out of you.
Listen, I wouldn't say that I quite love Justin Fields. I am in the maybe he is, maybe he isn't camp. So we'll see. But I am in the camp that you can use David Montgomery better. I am in the camp that Darnell Mooney's going to take a step forward. I am in the camp that even their tight end Cole Kmet should be a better player this year than he has been. And also, you know, there are pieces out there that could make sense for the Bears at some point here. So I don't know. They're not going to spend. Yep.
We're going to let you go in a minute, but we've got to inform the people. Your playoff tennis match.
Oh.
I know this is painful, but you know, we left people with a cliffhanger. How did it go? What happened, Carl?
So, you know, I got out there, I had my mental game on, I spoke in the mirror myself. You can do it, Carm. All that went on. And then I get out there, and a gentleman by the name of Mike Weinstein just took me to the woodshed. I played arguably well, as I texted you, Verderham, and he's just a better, more talented, supreme tennis player. I was trying to battle to stay alive in the last game, even though I was lost the first set 6-2 and was down 5-1 in the second. I know nobody wants to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm at the net. He hits a passing shot past me. I reach out with my left hand. I'm a righty and just somehow get a little bit of the racket on it. It goes over the net and I'm going to win the game. We're playing no ad. So that point, whoever wins that point wins the game. The dude sprints in. I don't know. He was like, put on his Carl Lewis shoes, flicks it over. And I'm just standing there watching him do it. Match over, shake hands, go home, and feel like the inadequate athlete that unfortunately I guess I am. So the season is over. I am in the loser's bracket. So hopefully tonight I won't lose on the loser's bracket side, which that's just consolation. You guys paid. We'll give you a court for one more night before the summer starts. Go ahead and have it. So.
Have you thought about making the transition in your life from tennis to pickleball? Because that might be an area now where you can flat out dominate, and then it's all winners brackets the rest of the next, I don't know, 10, 20 years or so.
I'm dreaming up being that 83-year-old that's still out there playing with the 70-year-olds, Ben, on the tennis court. I will not give up. All I'm thinking about is YouTubing what's the best exercises I can do to get some flexibility back in my hips at this tender age that I'm at, because it's a little tight down there right now. So no, I can't go to pickleball, at least not yet.
No, Carm, look at it this way. You know, 20 years of pickleball, then the home. All right. Hey, good luck with the Bears OTAs. You might have had a better performance at tennis last week than the Bears are going to have this season, but we shall see. Enjoy what it looks like a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day at Halas Hall. I'll be tweeting out a bunch of Bears content for anyone who's interested. To Windy City, hit that, check it out on the YouTube, become a subscriber. We appreciate it. And guys, have a great rest of the show. Thanks for having me.
All right. Good to see you, Carb.
See you guys.
I'm sure everybody enjoyed the Carm drop-in, which is always entertaining, especially when it's about Carm and Carm's failures in different various athletic events. I got to say, though, as much as I give Carm all kinds of crap, Carm, one of the nicest guys you could ever meet on and off the pod. He had me one time to the East Bank Club, where he is an esteemed member in Chicago, which, Heiser, the way you're shaking your head, I'm sure you've probably been there. It's a very swanky place.
I have. They offered many, many years ago when I was a college student and interning for the great Bruce Levine at ESPN Radio at the time. I think they offered like a membership for like college students for like $50 a month.
Wow.
And so I was able to go and get a workout in before heading to the ballpark, either going to Wrigley or going to the South Side each day. So yes, got in that East Bank Club experience and enjoyed it for the limited time that I was there.
I remember the first time I was there with Carm, we're walking past the bar. And somebody sitting there drinking I forget what it was, some kind of a cocktail. It was Tony Moriaki. He's just sitting there, former Chiefs and Bears tight end, sitting there hanging out, like late afternoon. God bless him. But we play basketball. And I will tell you, they should have thrown me out and then given me a prison sentence. Like, I had not played basketball in probably a decade. And Carl's like, yeah, we'll just play some shoot around. It was, I don't know that I hit, I think I took three shots. I think I hit the rim once. It was, and I used to play basketball. Like, it was no warm up, 10 years of rust, and just, hey, let's go. Let's play against these guys, some of which were like D2 and D3 athletes. It was unfortunate. It was an education. But Carr was like reasonably hanging in there. So
he's a good basketball player. Like, yeah, I haven't played against Carr. Like, we obviously like had played, some times earlier on when I was younger. I haven't played against him in a long, long time, but he always had that really good quick first step and a good jump shot too. He's a tough guy to play against.
As much as I love to crap on Carm, Carm's actually a much better athlete than he gives himself credit for. Like, good basketball player, good tennis player. I've played beer league softball with Carm. That was actually – that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's in his family. Like, his dad was, like, an all-state football player.
I didn't know that.
Like, legitimate, like, really, really talented football player growing up. Shout-out to Fred Carman, just an absolute dominant force. I believe it was Marshall High School in the 1930s, maybe? Yeah.
I was going to say, that man's pushing 100 candles. He's still trucking.
Yes, he is.
Good for him. But all right, so we leave Carm at Bears camp, which God bless Carm. But let's go to another team that the receivers are, shall we say, questionable. So I was doing some research on the Baltimore Ravens receiving core, and I'm just talking the wide receivers. I'm not talking about Mark Andrews for a second. If you total up their entire receiver depth chart and total the amount of receiving yards they had last season, the total is 1,012. There are 25 single players, including Mark Andrews, who had more receiving yards than the Ravens' entire receiving room. How concerned are you about the receivers in Baltimore and how that might hold them back from being the team that, frankly, it looks like they were going to be the last couple of years and it's never really quite developed in January?
I'm concerned, but it's also a really progressive and smart coaching staff in front office. And they did take a really talented wide receiver in Rashad Bateman last year. Now, he was hurt, never really got consistently going, but I still believe in his talent. I do think he's a fit for this offense. But the rest of the wide receiver room is – right now you're starting wide receivers. You're lining up if you're going in a three wide receiver set.
Yep.
You got Rashad Bateman. You got Devin Duvernay. And you got – is it James Proche?
It's not good.
Right. So what you're going to have to do, and this is certainly a reflection of the offense that they're running in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. And, you know, I think Hollywood Brown kind of made this point that it's not predicated on a number one wide receiver. The whole offense is built on the strength of Lamar Jackson in the running game. It's so interesting to me, like, just sort of how this team is put together, like purely based off of this team's skill set, which is good offensive line, electric, athletic quarterback, who showed, by the way, in his MVP year that he can make plenty of throws downfield. I still love Lamar Jackson in this league. I don't think he's slowed down one bit. The injuries are a little bit of a concern, but when he's healthy, I think he's as dangerous as almost anybody. And you have a really good tight end in Mark Andrews. They just don't care about passing the ball. They use it as a means to be more threatening with their run game. And their run game can be very good. J.K. Dobbins, when healthy, is an electric runner. Gus Edwards is an absolute beast inside. They just signed Mike Davis. Justice Hill is still hanging around if they need more of the running back. Remember, they went through a ton of backs and lost multiple guys in the preseason last year. So between Jackson getting hurt and multiple running backs going down very early in the season, like, they're going to get healthy this year. And Bateman is hopefully going to be healthy. So I'm concerned because the level of talent compared to the rest of the league doesn't hold up. But it's also an offense that doesn't really care about what that passing numbers are going to look like.
Right. So that kind of leads me to my point. I'm not worried about them in the regular season because they are very well coached. I think defensively they will be much better. Humphrey will be back this year. Yep. Peters will be back. They drafted Kyle Hamilton to play safety.
Yeah, it's a great secondary.
Great. That team knows how to win football games. Look, I get it. Like, from an analytics perspective, people would roll their eyes so far back in their heads they'd be blind. But they do. They know how to win. I worry a little about the offensive line. Is Ronnie Stanley cooked? I think that's a fair question after what, unfortunately, has been a really injury-marred last couple of years. But they're going to run if Dobbins and Brad and Gus Edwards are both healthy. They're gonna rush probably 2,500 yards as a team. It's not even more than that. I mean, they're just going to with Lamar and everything else. The problem I have with them, and I think they're going to be a lot better than people think. I think they're slept on as much as any team in football. I wouldn't be shocked if they win 12 games. The problem I have with them is come the playoffs, when you play the best teams, you have to care if you can throw the football. Like, you have to care about that. In today's NFL, you can't play one way all the time, and that's just going to ride you to the Super Bowl. I worry about them, and it's been shown over and over in the postseason. They can't score. I mean, they just get into these games where – and I know the game in Buffalo, the weather was a huge factor. It was a brutal day weather-wise. But guess what? It's Buffalo. If you go up there again in January, it's probably going to be brutal. Like, the odds you're getting 60 and sunny in January in Buffalo, not great.
All right.
You go to Arrowhead. It may not be Buffalo. It's probably going to be pretty cold. And in Baltimore, it's probably going to be somewhat cold. Now, you might get a little bit of a better day in Baltimore than you would in Kansas City, certainly in Buffalo. Cincinnati, it's going to be cold. Like, all the teams that are really good, outside of maybe if you believe in the Chargers, I mean, even Denver, it's going to be cold. Like, those are cold places to play. They have struggled in those games to throw the ball for any amount of real yardage. Now, does the weather play a part in that? Maybe. But the other teams have been able to score enough points to win. And I just worry with Andrews as the one big guy, any reasonable team in the playoffs is just going to double him and say, beat us anywhere else. And I worry about that for them. I think they're a really good team. I think they could win the North. I think they could contend. But I think at some point, like if the Bills get into a problem in 3rd and 12, they've got Diggs. If the Chiefs get in that same problem, they have Kelce. You know, if the Bengals get in that problem, they got a million guys. If the Ravens get in a 3rd and even 8, if you double Andrews, then what? I mean, there's nowhere to go, and he's going to have to run for the first down. I thought last year, and then I'll leave it at this, you remember that game they played Thursday night against Miami, in Miami. Yes. Brian Flores in that game played cover 0 all night. They got on the line of scrimmage. They blitzed the shit out of them and just said, go ahead, throw it. We don't care. And they couldn't do anything. And now where's Brian Flores? He's on the Steelers. You think they might see that game plan twice? So I think it's just – that is a concern I have for them. Is I think in the regular season they'll figure it out. They're smart. They know what to do. They're well run. In the postseason, being smart's not enough because everybody's smart. It becomes really hard to win those games.
No doubt. You're relying a lot on Bateman taking that next step. And again, like the skill set is very different than that of Hollywood Brown. Like he's not going to be that deep threat for him. He's a guy that's a possession receiver,
yep.
Move the chain. So like in a pinch, it actually makes a little bit more sense to go ahead and rely on somebody like him as opposed to Hollywood Brown. So maybe that's what they're banking on. And I'm with you. I think Baltimore is a very dangerous team. Like I like their over quite a bit. When it comes to their win total this year, because it's going to be an improved defense. You're going to finally get healthy. You know, I think most sportsbooks right now have it at around 9 or 9.5. Baltimore is at least a 10-win team to me.
Yeah, I take over.
Especially if we think there's regression coming out of Cincinnati.
Easily over. All right, we're going to move on to a few more real quick. Gonzo will answer real quick. Does Miami make the playoffs? And did you see Tyreek's tweet to a Chiefs fan? I did not see the tweet. I do not know what it's about. As far as Miami make the playoffs, like I'll be brief. I do not think they make the playoffs. You've got to be a top 7 team to make the playoffs. Well, you want to talk about a team that I have no idea what to expect. The quarterback has been either injured or ineffective for a lot of his career. Now, the offensive line wasn't good. They did not have great weapons. And last year they finally added Waddle. They have Gesicki. And, of course, this year they'll be massively upgraded. But I don't know. I think they're better. But do I think they're better than Buffalo, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Cleveland, Indianapolis, Kansas City, L.A., Denver, the Raiders? No. Well, that's 9 teams. Like, I mean, I just have a really hard time. By the way, there's only 4 teams in the league this year that have a 3-game road trip. Philly, Green Bay, Kansas City, and Miami. Miami is the hardest of any of them. Miami's 3-game road trip comes in December all the way across the country to the Chargers. All the way across the country to the Niners at Buffalo. Good luck in those 3 games.
Yeah. Tough schedule, especially down the stretch for a first-time head coach who I believe in. Like, they found – by the way, they talk about another team that buys into the running game. Like, it's Mike McDaniel, and they brought Raheem Mostert, and they brought in some nice weapons there. I think Chase Edmonds signed with Miami as well. The difference is that they also signed Tyreek Hill. So you have Hill, you have Waddle, you have Gesicki in the middle of the field. Like, it's going back to your point, Verderam, about like you can be a really good dominant running team and use it as a strength of your team, but you still got to be able to have the threat to go downfield. And Miami has that. I like them more next year when they've had a full year in this system with McDaniel finally taking his lumps a little bit as a first year head coach. They'll be a decent team. They'll be improved, I think, from a season ago. But, you know, defense might take a step back without Flores there. But yeah. I'm not baking on them making the playoffs. I just think there's too much competition, like you said, in a very, very difficult AFC right now.
It's so, so hard to say.
Yeah. They're an NFC playoff team, but they're
not an NFC. Yeah. But that just goes to show, right? Like, it matters where you are.
Of course.
Like I said earlier in the show, the Raiders, I think they're the worst team in the AFC West. I think you agree.
Yes.
If they were in the AFC South, I'd pick them to win the division. Like that's, but they're not in the AFC South. And that, like, that's the problem you deal with, right? I mean, I agree with you all day. Ben at Miami was in the NFC East. I might pick them, but they're not in the NFC East. So that's the way it goes. And look, speaking of the NFC East, real quick here, as we have a few more, and then we'll get into the MVP odds. All right, let's pick one. Eagles, Washington, or Dallas in the NFCs? Or I guess if you really want to go nuts, the Giants. Who do you like in the NFC East in the division that is, shall we say, open?
Yeah. There's still a lot left to be desired in this division. I don't think it's as much of a cakewalk for Dallas as most project it to be. I still think they have a lot of holes that they really didn't fix on the defensive side of the ball. And that was with an insane year out of Micah Parsons. Here's what I'll say. Because, and we talked about this briefly last week, and I get your hesitation here. But if Carson Wentz in that first year in Washington,
oh, don't you dare.
If he plays competent, maybe above the level of just competency, that team top to bottom might be there with the most talented rosters in that division. It's a really good defense. They're going to be healthier this year. Chase Young is going to be back. They have a really good group of skill position players. Offensive line, I think, is improved, but it's not great. But it's all dependent on Wentz. If Wentz is league average to above average, which is substantially better than what they got last year, they could absolutely win that division and do it at like 4.5 to 1 odds. Like, I don't rule it out of the question. And I still think you have legitimate concerns with the Eagles and start trying to figure out some more issues with some aging members of that defense. I think I love Jalen Hurts, but you're going to deal with more defenses starting to scheme towards him a little bit more. The scouting reports are starting to come out on him a little bit more. And I also wonder if Nick Sirianni can adjust, right? Like, that's the thing about a lot of these first-year head coaches that have success in that first year. I think about it with Matt Nagy constantly. Yeah. Great first year. Never adjusted since because it was all about the scheme and less about the players. He never adjusted. And I don't know whether or not that's going to be the case for Sirianni. And I wonder if there's going to be some regression in Philadelphia as a result of it. I just think Washington talent-wise, if you get a respectable year out of Wentz and he doesn't try to move himself out of another team in 1 year, I'd like them as a dark horse team. And I'd probably pick them because I think they offer the most value in that division.
They might offer the most value. I will take Dallas. And I'm not a big Cowboy. Like, I think the Cowboys get overrated all the time. And I'm sure will. I've seen people put them in the top five teams in the league, which is just mind-blowing to me. I don't know. Anybody can look at that team and think they're top five. I don't care as much. Like, everybody's like, oh, well, they lost Randy Gregory. Randy Gregory has 16 sacks his entire career. And I get, like, pressures on. They have DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons. They'll be okay there. My bigger concern with them is – you lose right tackle Lyle Collins, and you lose Amari Cooper. That's my bigger concern. Gallup's coming off a late-season torn ACL.
Yep.
But still, I'm a big believer. When all else fails, and I don't know that anybody has a massive advantage over the other one, who's the best quarterback? Well, Dak is. Dak's the best quarterback. So I will take him. Like, I believe in him. I like Jalen Hurts. I think he's got to get better as a passer to some degree. Now, they brought in A.J. Brown. That's a real upgrade. Mm-hmm. I love their draft. They're another franchise. They just win games. Like, that franchise, you know, people can say whatever they want about Howie Roseman. Howie Roseman puts good teams together all the time. They are always a hard team to beat. They're always tough inside. You know they're good in the trenches on both sides of the ball. I agree with you with Washington on the weapons thing. Now they have Jahar Dotson as well. I have two concerns with them. One is, even before Chase Young got hurt last year defensively, they were a mess. They shouldn't have been. Issues,
no doubt.
They shouldn't have been. Look, their talent is right there. But they were a mess defensively last season. And then Wentz, and I won't get into the whole thing, because I've said it a million times in the podcast, but Wentz to me, like, you know how much of a pain in the ass you've got to be to have the numbers you had last year, to win 9 games, for the team to have given up a first and a third round pick for you, and then for them to dump you off on the side of the road and go, we don't care.
Yeah.
It could be Sam Ehlinger, who's our quarterback, get out. I mean, you've got to be beyond a pain in the ass to be sent on your way under those circumstances. And I always believe, too, you've covered the league forever, too. When a coach gets up to the podium and says all this stuff during the week, look, that's all BS. A lot of it is just coach speak, whatever they got to say. I mean, these guys go through media training, for God's sake. They're going to go up there and they're going to say what they have to say. I remember watching that game last year at the end of the season against Jacksonville. And the Colts are down 10 points. And the Colts were handing off like nonstop in that game. They're just horrified of him having to throw the football. And the second he had to, it was a pick and another pick and the game was over. I'm with you. Like, if Wentz surprises me and he's really good, then yeah, sure, maybe they win the division. But I'll take Dallas in a division that I think is probably still the worst in football. Maybe the AFC South is. But the NFC East is not overwhelming. And then, look, real quick before we get to the MVP odds, yes or no here on Tomlin. Will he finally have a losing season in Pittsburgh? We talked about how good the AFC North is. Do you think the Steelers can still get to 9-plus wins?
They had a lot of things go right for them with Ben playing as horrible as he played for them to get to that point last year. He's never had a losing season, like you said. And if he doesn't have a losing season this year, then he's deserving of Coach of the Year.
Hall of Fame tonight.
Yes. Go ahead and rush him through. Like, just there's no doubt about it. And I do like Mike Tomlin quite a bit. Like, the numbers speak for themselves. Like, that is a dude that gets it, that gets culture, that gets winning. He's been in a perfect situation, and he has capitalized on it. And they've been a wonderful organization under his leadership and a Super Bowl winning organization. But the defense has to regress a little bit, right? Like, Watt can't repeat that. There's still plenty of issues and holes in this team. The offensive line still isn't good. I don't know whether or not Kenny Pickett is going to start games this year. I don't know if it's going to be a full season of Mitchell or halfway through, and then Mitchell Trubisky gets the Mike Glennon treatment that he had back when he was in Chicago, 4 or 5 years ago. Like, all of these different situations are very much in play for Pittsburgh. And it's a division that, top to bottom, I suppose maybe Pittsburgh got being at the bottom. Cincinnati went to the Super Bowl last year. Even if they regress, they're still probably a double-digit win team. Baltimore, we just talked about it. We love the over on their 9.5.
Yep.
Who am I missing?
Which is kind of the wild card in all this because of Watson.
But. Right. And we'll probably get more of that information within the next few weeks. But if Watson is there, then they're probably a double-digit win team too.
Right.
So there's just enough going against Pittsburgh with a brand new quarterback. Like, at least with Roethlisberger, he kind of knew what his limitations were. With Trubisky, yeah, maybe he plays decent. But again, there's just not enough right there right now. They're not going to be a terrible team. Like, they're not like Bears bad.
No, but they're not.
I'd project them for maybe 7-8 wins. Like, I think they'll be close. I just don't think they get there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I pegged them at 7. I think is where I had them. I just can't get the division is too tough. Now, will they win a couple of those games just because they know how to win? Yeah, they probably will. Like, they'll probably take one from Baltimore because those games are always fist fights. You know, and then between Cleveland and Cincinnati, they'll probably, maybe they get Cleveland. You know, they nip them once or something. They're just so limited offensively.
Yeah.
They don't have a quarterback. The line stinks. Who do you love as a receiver there? I like Deontay Johnson when he catches the ball. Claypool's a good player. I don't know that he's great. He had an incredible start to his rookie year and really has not been able to keep that up. I like Freiermuth as a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
So their weapons are good. They're not great, but the line's bad and the quarterbacks are bad. Like, if you, again, kind of the old Dolphins argument I just made, if you look at Pittsburgh and you rank these teams in the AFC, we don't have to go through the whole thing right now, but like, who are they definitively better than in the AFC? It's a short list. The Jets, okay, nobody else in the AFC East, nobody in the AFC North, nobody in the AFC West, Houston, and then probably Jacksonville. That's the list. Like, they're definitively better than three teams in the AFC. That's a hard – and you got to get to nine? I can't get there. I can't do it. So, all right, look, let's move on. I'm assuming that Trubisky and Pickett are not coming up in this next segment. So, NFL MVP odds. Heisler, you're the bet side of guru here. I will let you take the floor a little bit. But you looked at the odds today. What stands out to you is some guys who are maybe sleepers, who are good, solid plays if you're trying to get big value.
So, but before I dive into sleepers, I kind of put them in different tiers. And so for anybody that's, you know, just joining us or is curious to know where WinBet has most valuable player odds right now, Josh Allen is the favorite. He's 6-1. Pat Mahomes, 7.5-1. Tom Brady at 9-1. Then you have the other names that most people would consider. Aaron Rodgers, who's won it the last 2 years, is 10-1. Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow are 12-1. The first guy on my list is Russell Wilson. And we talked about him a little bit at the beginning of the show. You and I both believe he is not cooked. In fact, it's the opposite. And he's finally in a situation where they are going to give him plenty of opportunities to take downfield shots, to be able to move the pocket a little bit, to not only be a complete foundational running team. And I do think there's an opportunity for him to be very successful. And again, narrative is a big part of this. It shouldn't be the only thing, but it does factor in. And if the Broncos start winning some of these games in the toughest division in football and they get off to that really good start, again, the backside of the schedule is going to be tough. But I think with the early portion, like we just talked about, Russell Wilson has a chance to get off to maybe a 6-2 start with very good numbers. All of a sudden, you're looking at a guy who's right now 15-1, possibly going as high as maybe 3-1, 4-1. There's value here, even if you're not necessarily sure if he's going to win it. So I think Russ, based on the fact that he has more weapons now in Denver, that it's in an offense that's going to be tailored to his success, and the guy coaching him just coached the back-to-back MVPs in Aaron Rodgers, bodes well for him. So I think 15-1 is actually reasonable for Russell Wilson, especially if you buy into some of the narratives in the early portion of the season. What do you think of Russ at 15-1?
I think it's a decent play. I mean, look, first of all, anytime you get a quarterback on a team that you expect to be good with some weapons at 15-1, who certainly has the potential of Russell Wilson, I think you have to look at that and go, okay, I mean, that's a real possibility. And we're talking, of course, about who do you like as value bet? I mean, we're not talking about the Josh Allens and the Patrick Mahomes. As everybody and their mother would tell you, yeah, of course, those two guys, not a bad way to make a buck if you're trying to win and you're going to take a favorite. But for a guy who is beyond, you know, 10-1, 12-1, yeah, I think Wilson, we talked about it. He does have weapons. None of them are unbelievable, but there's a lot of good ones. The other thing that helps them, they're going to be on prime time a lot.
Yep.
And again, like you said, narrative shouldn't matter, but let's be real. Of course it matters. Of course it matters. It does. 100% it does. He's also got the thing going for him that he's never had an MVP vote. Like, that helps too. Like, you know, it's going to be, you know, if they're great, they're 12-5 and they're rolling, like, there's a little bit of a Cinderella quality to it. So I do think he's interesting. And I think, look, I'll give you a guy. I'm curious, and I don't have the list in front of me. I
got the odds up.
Okay. Derek Carr, what are his odds?
So Carr is actually next on my list. So I'm glad you brought him up. He's 30-1 over at WinBet. Again, we both project the Raiders to finish in last place in a really tough division.
And if they don't, it's going to be because they score 35 points a game.
Right. Like, yeah, that's what you're kind of banking on. You're banking on Carr winning this award because the Raiders are surprising people. They're getting off to another good start and they're closing games kind of the way that they did down the stretch last year. And the numbers just go through the roof because he's got Devontae Adams into the mix now with Hunter Renfro, Darren Waller in that offense. And I know how you feel about Josh McDaniels and the results have not been good away from Tom Brady, but I would have to imagine that he does improve with McDaniels compared to the guys that were coaching him before. which proved not to necessarily work out in his favor. Like, I do buy the idea of McDaniels improving Carr's skill set, even at this point in his career where he's been in the league for a long time. They're going to score a lot of points because they have to score a lot of points. And I do think that's going to reflect on Carr as a consistent option who continues to climb and climb and climb, unless they have one of those games where he just completely pees down his leg and it's over. I look at that in a value perspective for someone that's going to have to throw the ball a ton, that's competing in a very tough division. That, again, if the narrative fits and they start to surprise, and we're talking about the Raiders as a possible dark horse to win this division, it adds up. And I like the value there at 30-1 for Carr, especially bringing in somebody like Devontae Adams into the mix.
I love the value there. Even though we both agree we don't think the Raiders are going to be particularly great this year, look, they're going to throw the ball a million times.
Yeah.
A million times. The line's not good. The running backs aren't great. Like, that is going to be on Carr. Like, sink or swim with that team. It is going to be on him dropping back and throwing to the three guys you mentioned over and over and over and over and over. Like, if they win 11 games, it's going to be because Derek Carr threw for 5,000 yards and has 42 touchdown passes. Like, there is no plausible scenario the Raiders win 10 or 11 games to make the playoffs and Carr threw for, like, 3,700 yards. There's no way that's happening, in my opinion. So, one other guy I thought of, and this would be a long shot, but I think is interesting. What are the odds on Jalen Hurts?
Jalen Hurts is also 30-1. He's in the same cap – are in the same conversation as Cooper Kupp, Derek Carr, Matt Ryan. All four of those guys are 30-1 this year.
I actually thought about Matt Ryan too. If Jalen Hurts was getting like 40 or 50-1, I might have said, you know, because I don't think his odds, like, if you said to me, does Carr have a better chance of getting to the MVP than Hurts? I'd say, yeah, he does. Like, the one thing with Hurts he does add, of course, is the mobility. He can run, yes, for a bunch of yards as well. So there is that. And Philly is a big market team. They'll be in the spotlight plenty. Hurts is an interesting guy. Like, I remember when he came out, a lot of people in the league said, hey, look, this kid handled everything at Alabama really well, there with Tua at the same time, goes to Oklahoma. I mean, he learned under Lincoln Riley and Nick Saban, and he was really good for both schools, consummate pro. He's gotten better as his career has gone on. And look, he's been a two-year NFL player, but he's really only started for 1 year.
Yeah.
He started at the very, very end of his rookie season. They were awful. I mean, they were all banged up, beat up around him. I could see Hurts really having a year where all of a sudden – now, look, I don't think he's going to throw for 40 touchdowns, but could I see him growing for 4,000, you know, in a perfect storm with maybe 30 touchdowns and he runs for another 800 yards? I mean, it's possible. They add A.J. Brown. They have Devonta Smith. They have Dallas Goedert. Very good offensive line in front of them. Sirianni's a good offensive coach. So, again, we're talking long shots. I like him better at, like, maybe 40-1 or 50-1. But he intrigues me more than most in that long shot category.
It's certainly in play. And, I mean, the passing touchdown numbers don't really help him. He only had 16 last year. Threw for just over 3,100 yards. But he also rushed for almost 800 yards and had 10 touchdowns. And if you buy into the theory of, like, top fantasy guys might lead to a conversation amongst quarterback intrigue and building up the narrative, now, Hurts finished tied with Aaron Rodgers for 7th in points per game as a fantasy quarterback last year. So that matters. He's going to be a guy that goes early in fantasy drafts. So I think somebody like Hurts, again, the NFC East, all four of those teams rank as the easiest strength of schedule heading into 2022 based on last year's win-loss record. So it's more than feasible for somebody like Hurts to make that mark, especially with a real-ass wide receiver now in A.J. Brown. Let me give you one last name worth considering, and that's Trey Lance. It follows kind of a popular trend from, you know, last couple of years of second-year guys going out, balling out that year and winning MVP. It happened with Mahomes, happened with Lamar Jackson. Again, right, it's a trend, so it doesn't necessarily mean that it's reflective of what's going to happen in the future. But you saw the skill set in the limited capacity. Like, he can be absolutely electric. And having a full year to understand Shanahan's offense – with the weapons around him and a really good offensive line, I buy it. And this is also somebody that has been a target of a lot of sharp money early on this offseason. He opened at a lot of sports books at 80-1. He's now at 50-1. It's a long shot, but that's part of the intrigue here. Lamar Jackson opened up his rookie or his sophomore year at 66-1. My buddy Joe Ostrowski bet him at 66-1, cash that MVP bet. Like, these are the situations that can occur in the NFL when you're in the right situation with the right coaching staff and you're able to exploit teams that don't know how to defend against you. And we haven't seen enough of Trey Lance for a lot of NFL defenses to be able to do that yet. And Shanahan's offense, granted, that does not always come through in the postseason, but man, it does a good job, especially of getting guys out in space. Yards after the catch is going to be big for Lance to throw to somebody like both Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. You still have Kittle, assuming he can stay healthy. There's weapons for him, and he's absolutely electric in space. I don't put it past him as a legitimate dark horse candidate at 50-1.
Okay. I don't hate it. Look, so real quick for me, two things, and we can wrap it. So I'm going to read off these numbers, and I'll explain why in a second. 59.8 completion percentage, 35 touchdown passes, 10 picks, 7.1 touchdown percent. So in other words, if you throw 100 passes, 7.1 are touchdowns. This player never had more than 5.1 any other season. 7.1 easily led the league. And also, in addition to those passing stats, that year this player rushed for 636 yards and 10 touchdowns. Cam Newton in 2015 won the MVP that year. Could Jalen Hurts have a year like that? Maybe. I mean, it's a high watermark for Cam, but that would be my argument for the long shot. The last one I would toss in there, and this one I would say, frankly, would be $5 on this. Trevor Lawrence. Like, nobody was screwed over more as a rookie in the history of football than Trevor Lawrence. Okay.
He's 75-1. Guys that are in that ranking are Nick Chubb, Jamar Chase, Mac Jones, actually a bunch of guys there, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Justin Fields, Najee Harris, and Stephon Diggs. You're talking about like elite level
skill
position players. Najee Harris is 75-1.
That's aggressive. I think that's actually great value. Because think of it this way. Doug Peterson's a real head coach. He's an offensive-minded head coach. They went out and brought in some weapons. Like, say whatever you want about Christian Kirk. He got massively overpaid, but he might be good for 1,000 yards. You have James Robinson, who's coming back from the Achilles. We'll see if he's healthy at the beginning of the year. But you have Travis Etienne, who's coming back, who's healthy. They went out and addressed the offensive line. They brought back Cam Robinson. They brought in Brandon Scherff from Washington, who's one of the best guards in the league. That's a team. They still have LaVisca Chenault. That's a team that actually, like, has some players on it and has a real coach now. No, I think Jacksonville's
very easy division other than the Colts, and depends on how you evaluate the Titans right now.
Which it's the worst division in the AFC, easily. Correct. And look, now do I think he's going to win MVP? No, it's way 75-1. But could I make a case that this year he shows what everybody thought he was going to be? Yeah. And if you think that 75-1, I mean, is that not worth $10? Hey, you know what? Screw it. It hits 750. I like his at 75-1. I feel like that's a huge value, just to basically bet on Urban Meyer no longer is there. This should, I mean, the Bears. We talked about them earlier. They can't be worse. No. This can't be worse. Like, it can only be better. So I actually – and I think Lawrence is going to end up being a very good quarterback. So I would think that that's actually a pretty good value.
Yeah. I think it's a good value play as well. I think my concern is, where does Lawrence outplay all the other quarterbacks that are similar to him? Does he throw for more touchdowns or yards than Pat Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? No, probably not. I think with somebody like Carr, he could lead the NFL in passing yards this year. You know, Jalen Hurts could lead the NFL in rushing yards, maybe only behind Lamar Jackson. But if he throws for 25 plus touchdowns and turns the ball over a little bit less and rushes for another 800 and runs in for 10 more touchdowns than it's in, you know, same thing with Trey Lance, but with a better team to be able to elevate what he does, both running the football and passing the football. I mean, Lawrence is athletic enough to be able to run a little bit, but it's a good value play. I think if he gets off to a good start, you're going to see that number really start to take off at the odds at wherever they're being set in Vegas. But yeah, I just have some concerns that he won't be able to reach those top tier guys in the stats that are comparable to the type of quarterbacks that they are.
All right. That is the show for this week. Heisler, so what is going on, A, in life, and B, at BetSide?
A lot going on at BetSide. I'll start there. We got the PGA Championship this week. Our guys, Ian McMillan and Joe Summers, have done an awesome job with a ton of different content leading up to the second major of the year over at Southern Hills. Pretty cool that Tiger Woods is playing yet again. It's the first time that he's played, that he's actually having a chance to defend his PGA Championship, because he won this event at Southern Hills in Tulsa in 2007, but he's 101. And I think the odds makers aren't as concerned about Tiger winning this time around compared to when he opened up at around 50-1 when he played the Masters. So we got that. Obviously, the NBA playoffs are going on. Major League Baseball every day as well. Anything that you're looking for as far as props, plays of the day, we have our daily show, the Daily Bet Slip, which you can catch every day on YouTube and on at BetSided at 5 p.m. Eastern. So definitely check that out if you're looking for a few bets to consider on the day. I'm hosting today's show with our guy, Reed Wallach. As far as life goes, Verderam, I got my oldest son turning 3 next week. You know, first birthday, obviously a milestone. He turned 2, 3 months after our youngest was born. So, you know, we were kind of sleep deprived and trying to figure out what the hell we were doing when he turned 2. I feel like this is like an underrated milestone birthday, because he just went through like a year of like his sort of preschool thing. Like, I'm having full conversations with him. You know, if he's starting to watch a little bit more sports on TV, I feel like this is like a more meaningful, substantial birthday in his life, because he's actually excited about his own birthday and is asking for things and, you know, knows that he's going to have a party at this park at a certain time. I don't know. I know that you have a couple of kids as well. What was it like celebrating the 3rd birthday? And do you feel like those same type of overwhelming feelings that I have right now?
Yeah, it's good. You know, I think the 1st birthday is, like you said, it's like that big milestone, of course, right? It's number 1. But it's really more like that birthday party is more for like the parents that you survived.
Correct.
The kid has no idea what the hell's going on. You throw a smash cake in front of the kid and they just slam their face into it and they're good to go.
Yeah.
I think you're right. You know, you get into the 3rd, 4th, because my oldest, Maisie, who made a brief appearance here this afternoon, she's 4.5.
Okay.
And then the youngest one is 6 weeks. So, I mean, you know, she's got a little ways to go before she turns 1. But, yeah, it becomes cool. Like, as they get a little bit older, they get excited. They ask for a few things. You know, for whatever the reason with Maisie, I always think of Christmas. That always seems to stand out. Like, she just got, like, I remember her 3rd Christmas very vividly. She was very excited.
Yeah.
You know, ran down, you know, the kind of that, like, classic story, right? Ran down the stairs, went to the tree.
Kind of like a little Hallmark moment for the holiday.
Yeah. That's yeah. Good. Except it cost me way more than it looks like in a Hallmark movie. but that, and it's 7 a.m. and no one's sleeping the rest of the day. But I think it's fun as that goes along. Like, you can just, like, you know, when your kid's born, it's such a moment. But then your kid's born and you're excited and you're so happy, but you're also like, I don't know what to do because this kid can't do anything. Like, I'm going to feed this kid and talk to the kid, and the kid's going to look at me and go, I don't know. Like, what? I don't know what to do. As you get older, it becomes more fun. Like, with Maisie, tonight is her first soccer game. So I've got to go, like, I'm coaching. So I get to go coach that. That'll be fun. You know, like, she's all excited. That kind of stuff definitely makes it worthwhile. My wife, I mean, 6 weeks out from having a kid, she's like, oh, we should have another kid. I'll be in the home if we have another kid, okay? I'll tell you right now, that's not happening. I would be in – I love our children. I would be in deep emotional pain with more kids. I don't think I can – although not quite – the transition, not quite as painful as your friend and our colleague Ian McMillan, who basically emotionally passed away during the Maple Leafs game. Who, for those who don't know, works at BetSide. And Ian's a great guy. He joined us on our draft show. And he is an Atlanta Falcons and a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. I mean, that's worse than life in prison. Like, How does that happen? And he like live streamed himself for games. Everyone in Toronto, oh, deep, deep pain.
He's a glutton for punishment, and you know I give him a lot of props because his commitment to the content is spectacular. For anybody, like I think it's at the top of his Twitter page at Ian MacBets. If you want to watch just pure pain, like you mentioned, like he's recognizing the moment of what happened. He bought a bottle of champagne for the Leafs to finally win a playoff game. He had a victory cigar. And then, you know, because he just decided he wanted to drink the champagne even though he lost, well, he has a paper bag over his head. He's trying to drink the champagne. The paper bag is on his head. It doesn't go through the mouth hole. And just he pours it all over himself. And it's just spectacular content. And you should all be following him and at BetSided to be able to see. I hate to celebrate another person's pain, but like
I know.
From a comedy perspective, God, it was spectacular.
I feel bad because like I've been there. I mean, the Chiefs finally won the Super Bowl a couple years ago, but anyone who's familiar with the Chiefs history knows the deep, deep, unrelenting pain that preceded that Super Bowl. And I'm a Knicks fan, so there's been plenty of it, right? I knew exactly how he felt, and I'm watching that Toronto Tampa game. I actually thought of him with like 3 minutes left. I'm like, oh my God, man, they're gonna lose another game. It's unfortunate. It's traumatic. You know, people. You always get those people in life who are friends, whatever, but they don't know because they're like they're not sports fans. I'm like, it's just a game. You know, like, look, it's not just a damn game. Okay, like if it was just a game, I wouldn't care as much. I wouldn't be as invested. That's a whole nother argument.
That's what it is. It is the time invested.
Yes.
That you go through it to hope hours upon hours upon hours. Sometimes you change your entire schedule around to be able to commit that time. And then when it's just all over and they do it in a way that completely and totally just rips your heart out of your chest, then that's when you're left thinking to yourself, why did I spend all that time? And that's both the beauty and the curse of being a fan. And it's what makes it great.
It is. And I'll leave it at this. You know what? I always used to feel like when people would like refer to a sports team as we, that always used to drive me nuts. I'm like, you're not on the team. It's just stop. Yeah. The older I get, the more I'm like, look, man, you want to call you want we, that's fine. Because you're so invested. You're not lifting weights with the team and you're not on the jet going to another game. Fine. You spend a lot of money. You're invested as all get out. You're more broken up a lot of times than the players at the end of the season when it didn't work out. Like, you want to go we, I'm fine with it. I've changed my stance on that. Like, it is an investment. I'll tell you right now, the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was be at Super Bowl 54 up in the press box, and I'm watching the Chiefs-Niners game, and I'm sitting there, and listen, it's a deep personal responsibility, I feel like, when I'm writing or reporting to be unbiased and be professional.
Of course.
And I can honestly say I've always been able to do that. But emotionally, watching that fourth quarter from the press box and not being able to, like, jump up when Damian Williams was running down the sideline, that is the hardest thing I've ever done in my professional life. And by the way, I was next to somebody who was very openly a 49ers fan. Like, it took everything I had not to jump out of my seat and just start screaming. But it was fun. I remember at the end of the game, yeah, the NFL, they come up, they go, which locker room would you like to go down to? It's like, I will go to Kansas City's locker room. Thank you very much. You know, or which press area. And I was like, I'll go to Kansas. But in any event, listen, God bless Ian and every other Leafs fan out there who's dealing with just unbelievable psychological torture. But I hope everybody enjoyed the show. Heisler, thank you so much for coming on, man, for not only your normal spot, but for what has turned into almost an hour and a half. We had Carm on from Alice Hall. We get to hear about Carm's athletic failures. That's always fun. But, hey, everybody, thank you so much for joining us here on Stack in the Box. We, as always, will be back next Tuesday. I'll give an update. We got my daughter's got soccer tonight and on Thursday, so I'll give an update on how those games went. Those kids better win the games. I'm not there to be made out to be a loser. I don't care if they're 4 or 5 years old. So with that, for Ben Heisler, I am Matt Verder, and this has been Stack in the Box. Thank you so much. We'll see you again next week.